Hello, comrades, and welcome back to Season 4, Episode 9 of Spectre. Today, we're collaborating with Challenge Magazine, the publication of the Young Communist League of Britain since 1935. This youth magazine provides the latest articles and more by the Marxist-Leninist youth of Britain and the world. In this collaboration, we're bringing you an interview conducted by Jack Tennyson from the Glasgow branch of the Young Communist League of Britain, where he speaks with a member of the Russian Komsomol, the youth wing of the Communist Party of the Russian Federation. In this episode, Jax interviews Alexander Rusakov from the Komsomol to ask about the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, the expansion of NATO since the end of the Warsaw Pact, and how the class struggle at the home of Russia during a time of conflict has intensified. So without further ado, and I'll pass you on to Jax, and you can hear from Jax and Alexander.
The first question we have is, what is the general view of the Russian working class of this conflict, the Communist Party's view of the origin of this conflict, and just the kind of feeling among everyday working people in Russia?
So, speaking about this special military operation that's ongoing in Ukraine currently, I will want to start from the basics of the Marxist theory, because this chronological order of this conflict starting from 2014, I guess, is highly discussed already among the media, mass media, in your country, I guess, in my country, definitely. So I wanted to dive into the Marxist analysis, and after that, we will, of course, get into how it's evolved in this military conflict that's currently ongoing. So firstly, I wanted to remind you about the basics of Marxism, and firstly about the base and the superstructure in Marxist theory. And the base is, of course, everything that's devoted to production, means of production, commodity production, and so on and so on, et cetera, et cetera. While the superstructure is, of course, everything devoted to cultural differences, religion, religious differences, ethnical differences, etc. And so when we analyze the different nations, different ethnicities, different cultures, and what's happening in Ukraine currently, we have to firstly analyze the markets, the production. We have to make that connection between the production and the crisis that's ongoing in Ukraine. We do it because we are Marxists. And I, of course, want to start with the fall of the Soviet Union, which is a great, great tragedy for us. I can't even describe how tragic it was for our people in Russia and in Ukraine, too. Because our production has basically decreased by a lot. And after the 1991, we suffered many, I would even say, casualties of banditism and also of this economic crisis of 1990s. We have 12.5 million people population decrease. Over the 1990, from 1990 to 2021, so that's 12 million people lost in these 30 years. When it all came down to the fall of the Soviet Union, the Western commodities, I mean, firstly the American ones, but then the European ones, has flooded our markets in Russia, in Ukraine, in Belarus, and all of 15 republics. And so when it happened, these production lines, which were between the Ukraine and Russia, Russia and Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, they all crashed because they are not needed anymore. The Russian bourgeoisie had the most profits while trading with the West. And so our production lines, our factories were closed, they were shut down. And I live in Moscow. I don't even know if there is any Soviet factory that's still ongoing, that still produces something, some goods in Moscow, and not licensing it from the different countries. All big factories like Hammer and Sickle factory, they were demolished, and They are now living apartments built there. And so I'm glad, actually, that I'm speaking to a British person, because you would understand me, I guess, perfectly in this. In Soviet Union, we, of course, had 15 Soviet republics and different ethnicities and nations which were in the Soviet Union, all part of the Soviet Union. And
you said British there, right?
Yeah.
I would personally, to be nitpicky, call myself a Scottish person that lives in Britain, but I suppose that sort of...
Yeah. I heard that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's what I wanted to say. You can identify yourself as British, as a English person, as a Scottish person, as an Irish person, Welsh, or even the migrants. That's totally okay for you to self-identify yourself as British. And in the Soviet Union, it was totally okay, and most people did it. Yes, they're Uzbek. Yes, they're Buryat or something different. A man of different ethnicities. They all called themselves a Soviet man. So that's not an ethnicity, but that's their self-representation as a Soviet man. And this was a part of the huge. I would say policy of the friendship of the nations, of the different nations, which were different ethnicities, which were in the Soviet Union. Currently in Russia, we have this friendship preserved, I believe, and the policy of the Soviet Union is a little bit changed, but most of it is ongoing still. So in Russia, there are a lot of subjects and ethnicities. And in some regions, there are Buddhist regions in Russia. There are Islamic regions in Russia, Jewish region in Russia. And they all live in peace, and they all have the right to call themselves Russianin. And so you can be Buryat, Tatar, Bashkir, or even the Ukrainian who lives in Russia, and they're calling themselves Russian. Why is that? Because there are production lines, and these production lines are within the Russian borders, and so they associate with each other. People do associate with each other, and they have no problem while speaking with the people of other ethnicity. But when these production lines are demolished, and that was all, I guess, brilliantly planned from the West, from the America and Europe. And they know it perfectly. So this crisis that's ongoing in Ukraine was, I believe, planned with the fall of the Soviet Union by the West countries as a strategic masterpiece, I would say. And so that was brilliantly planned. Capitalistic West has always knew so that's. These production lines crumble will lead to that crisis. And talking about the Ukraine, the current situation in Ukraine, it all started in, I guess, 2014 is the starting point of this military conflict. So there was a Maidan. Maidan is basically like a square, the town square in Ukrainian language. It was a protest. The pro-fascist government came to power after that. I guess they were not fascists like at that point of the time, but they were definitely pro-fascist, and they have agreed to let fascism rise in their country. And so in 2014, one of the Komsomol is the youth of the party, of the Communist Party of Ukraine, which were not banned at that time, was burned alive at the house of Soviets in Odessa. He was 14 years old, and the neo-Nazi protesters, they burned him alive with many, many, many different people. And that was around the time when the Crimean Peninsula and Russian Federation unified, and in which the Donetsk, I would say, rebellion and Lugansk rebellion of the people, of the working class, has actually begun. And so talking about that and the role of the Communist Party of the Russian Federation, I would say that not all new, not all know now, and that is not like a very well-known fact, that one of the members and the leader of the Donetsk Communist Party branch, so the leader of the Donetsk Communist Party, his name is Boris Litvinov. He's actually the author of the Declaration of Independence of Donetsk People Republic. So he was, I would not say behind the wheel, but he was one of the first protesters, and he was actually devoted to this protest. And this protest erupted when the neo-Nazi, how you would say it, militia, neo-Nazi militia, so the armed people, they came to Donetsk and decided to demolish the Lenin's statue in the like town square. So it was all a like worker class rebellion. The Donbas region is famously known for its coal mines, and it always was between like Ukrainian and Russians, and different ethnicities live there. And there are a lot of working class people living there. And coming to 2022, when this crisis were ongoing for 8 years, so the war in Donbas region was 8 years already in 2022. In 2022, on the 22nd of February, our party, the Communist Party, in our Russian parliament called the Russian State Duma, has proposed that we recognize the independence of the Donetsk and Lugansk People Republic. And that was done by our government 2 days later. So we can say that the Communist Party is also involved in saving these people in Donbas, and this proposal by the Communist Party of the Russian Federation has a great value, and that was really helpful to the people of Donbas. Since then, since 2014, actually, we're the first party, major political party in Russia, and just party, political party in Russia, who have sent aid to help Donbas region. We've sent aid to the people of Donbas. We've sent aid to the militia of Donbas. We've sent aid to our forces, our military forces, after 2022 in Lugansk, Donetsk, Zaporozhye, Kherson, and in Kurskaya Oblast, when this, how they call it, counterattack by the Ukrainian army, so-called counterattack has occurred. And so nowadays, the Communist Party are helping people of Donbas. So we started it first. We did it before any bourgeoisic party did that. And we'll still stand with Donbas, and we fight. And our people, that's so sad to say, but they give their lives there. They pass away there.
No, thanks, Alex. That's a really interesting sort of perspective to take. It's kind of what it sounds like to me is that this conflict is bringing together the sort of liberal. Well, it's kind of it's flipped on its head. The word liberal. When I say liberal, I don't necessarily mean Western hegemony, but I mean sort of liberty-seeking capitalists, as well as those that seek the interest and the best for the working class, such as the Communist Party. With all that going on, you mentioned there that No Bourgeois Party has kind of came to the aid of the people on the ground, which is sort of typical. Is that sort of neglect of the average Russian quite common amongst the Russian ruling class at this hard time where fascism is at the door and there is such a need for unity?
So I guess what you're talking about, so that's in the early stages of this conflict in 2014, there was a big struggle in the bourgeois class whether to support or not support these defendants of the Donbas region. And while they were waiting, for the like final of this conflict, we were already helping Donbas, and we had volunteers there in Donbas region. So We help them with force, we help them with products, we help them with medicine, while the bourgeoisie has just waited and waited and waited. And then when it became popular in Russia to help Donbass, when it became the like mainstream, they rushed to help. Yes, they do help now, but we need to understand that that is just because of the political mainstream.
Yeah, and talking about the political mainstream, it's became the political mainstream here to kind of fearmonger about every clash between what we as communists understand as the multipolar New World Order and the Western hegemony that currently exists. Everything seems to be a pipeline towards World War III, the Western media would have you believe, but I don't think it's a very popular opinion among working class Brits or working class Russians that we want to put down tools at our work and abandon our lives to go kill one another. So I'd like to kind of know the sentiment in Russia. Is the media driving towards war with the West the same that it is here, or is it a different culture towards that?
Well, yes, we do see the NATO expansion to the east. We also do see the militarization of Europe, and we like tend to make analogies which are not great for Europe, and they put us back into the start of this 20th century, which is basically not good. But also, I do believe that we need to draw a line between the national unity, and we support national unity, and we support, of course, the cause of special military operation in Donbass, and between the bourgeoisic regime and its puppets and its mass media workers and so on and so on. So currently on the Russian television and in mass media, there is a coverage, a ton of coverage of the special military operation. And it's of course, it strikes all of us. It affects all of us. And you can't blame the media for that coverage. But with that, there is a huge depoliticization of the Russian media, and by depoliticization, I mean that people do not tend to be interested in politics anymore. Yes, they are supportive of the Russian army, but they don't have that opinion on the class struggle or even the liberal political spectrum. They do not tend to support any political party. And that, of course, is a problem for communists. We want them to be to self-identify themselves as the working class, to understand that they are part of the working class. And in mass media, currently there are no debates between the political parties, so they cancel that. There are pretty lots of not censorship, but the political forces, some political forces are not given words, and I guess the Communist Party is amongst of them. So our TV time is very low. We are still the second most popular party by votes in Russia, by far the second one. And the time we get on TV is less than other parties, which are third, fourth, fifth. So that's none. And in Russia, there is a federal television, and that basically not monopolizes, but it's pretty much everything that people tend to watch. So that's a big, 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 huge problem. And what I wanted to tell you, that drawing this line between the national unity and the class struggle in Russia, I prepared this amazing projection, I guess, and quote by Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. Maybe I will send it to you later. Maybe you can put it on screen, because I'm not a very good reader.
That'd be great,
so
yeah.
I will. Yeah. Not infrequently, we find the bourgeoisie of the oppressed nations talking of the national revolt, while in practice it enters into reactionary contact with the bourgeoisie of the oppressing nation behind the backs of and against its own people. In such cases, the criticism of revolutionary Marxists should be directed not against the national movement, but against its degradation, vulgarization, against the tendency to reduce it to a petty squabble. Incidentally, very many Austrian and Russian social democrats overlook this, and in their legitimate hatred of the petty, vulgar, and sordid national squabbles, disputes, and scuffles over the question, for instance, of which language shall have precedence in two-language street signs, refuse to support the national struggle. So Lenin wrote that in his work, A Caricature of Marxism, I guess it was in 1915, and he was right on points what happens in Russia now. Because the governments, they are still the bourgeoisie governments, they are still ran by the bourgeoisie forces, and we have a lot of so-called like political struggles, political problems, which are not class devoted and which are just this petty, vulgaric problems about the signs on the streets. So, for example, one of the most common and commonly discussed problems in Russia now is whether we want signs on Russian streets written on English. So we try to get this opposition with America, with the West, and try some political forces try to get off, get the signs away that are written coffee, like in English or something like that. And that's what Lenin said basically a century ago. He told that. And he also very greatly expressed that we should support this national unity. We should support this national struggle. And we should not support these acts of bourgeoisie that are devoted against this national struggle. And we saw that in 2014. We saw that in the first months of the special military operation, where not all, but parts of the bourgeoisie have finished trading with the West or even transiting the gas through the Ukraine. And that's, of course, part of the bourgeoisie games between each other, which are very profitable for different capitalists. Mm-hmm. And so I would also mention that about mass media, that there is a struggle with rising far-right agenda in Russia. Mm-hmm. So behind all that, behind the rise of patriotism, opinions, which is, of course, okay. Yes, that is good and great. There rises something that plays with this opinion, this patriotic opinion, which is the far right agenda. Mm-hmm. And so there are some political forces and some parts of the bourgeoisie who are interested in this agenda to rise. And to spread. There is, for example, a TV channel called Tsargrad, which basically, as you can maybe even hear, translates to the Tsar town, Tsar city. It spreads false information against Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. Mm-hmm. And its creator, not the creator, but the sponsor called Konstantin Malafeev, is a Russian oligarch who is very, very, he's very right, basically. So he supports all the different right movements. And I'm the member of the Komsomol, of the Communist Party Youth, as well as the party itself. And my comrades have started a project called Students Against Fascism. It was first devoted against starting of the school of Ivan Ilyin in one of the Russian universities. Ivan Ilyin is a famous Russian pro-fascist so-called philosopher. And we see this a lot when people, Ivan Ilyin, for example, he's a brilliant example of this. He lived in the Nazi Germany. He left Nazi Germany, but he did live there. He also was working at the university when the Hitler arrived to power, and he was apologetic, I guess this is the word. So he supported the Nazi regime, and yes, later after the World War, he somehow changed his opinions, but not entirely, and still find at some moments positive about the Nazi regime. People now in Russia, some parts of the bourgeoisie tend to make him like a national philosopher, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we see this process of far-right agenda rising and fascization in different parts of the capitalist society. I know it happens in Europe. I know it happens in America. We've seen it happening in Ukraine before, as I believe there is a fascist government right now without elections, without the Communist Party presence. Communists are banned, communist symbols are banned, and Russia, and I'm sorry, communists, my communist comrades are even expelled from the country, or brought into prison, or even brought into army, some people. So that's the fascist regime. And we see the rise of this fascization, this process of creating fascist movements in all different capitalist countries. And that's my and the party and Komsomol critiques of this capitalism regime. As we support the cause of special military operation, we do not support this far-right agenda.
Thanks again, comrades, for tuning in to another episode of Spectre. As always, be sure to leave us a like and review on whatever platform you're tuning in on. And of course, share us with your friends, comrades, co-workers, and everyone else in between. The ongoing inter-imperialist conflict between Russia and Ukraine has been used by the West as a means to expand NATO even further forward, having already previously broke all agreements in the Warsaw Pact. NATO and its allies continue to bolster its so-called defence spending. Billions of pounds and euros raised higher, whilst the people, the workers of Europe, continue to slip deeper into poverty and starvation. Liberals and those on the liberal left have signified that anything less than full solidarity with the Zelensky regime and the Azov battalion is treason. These liberals continue to amplify for war and expansion. They continue to call for imperialism within the region, refusing any semblance of peace talks occurring. These so-called humanitarians would sooner see both Russia and Ukraine burnt to the ashes as long as it meant that Britain, the EU, America, or NATO were to expand into that region to enhance the proxy war against China. The truth is, this conflict in Ukraine didn't merely start just a couple years ago in 2022. The West, since the fall of the Soviet Union, has played a massive role in causing destabilisation in the area. It's a tale as old as time. American and British state security services funding and training armed fascist paramilitaries and organisations for the benefit of Western imperialism. Which is why we all must stand united. We must all channel international solidarity at a time of global warfare and destruction. We must seek to understand the reasons for these conflicts, not merely through the lens of the BBC, CNN, or any other bourgeois media. This is why communicating with our comrades from across waters and across continents is vital. Because if we want to truly stop imperialism from destroying our planet, then we must link hand in hand with our fellow workers from across borders. We must join hand in hand, fist in fist, in smashing the machine of capitalism and ending all drives to war. Solidarity with the Komsomol, solidarity with the Communist Party of the Russian Federation.